Okay, thank you very much. I've changed the title of my talk because I just have 15 minutes and I thought I'd rather talk about one topic rather than about many. And just for more details, because I can't talk very much in detail about the stuff, there are three recent papers which go into pretty much detail of the simulation that I will show. And I will mostly focus here on the rapid neutron capture process in the context of neutron star mergers. That's what I will mostly talk about, recent paper by Korobkin et al. Now, I don't have to say very much in this audience about the introduction. Everybody knows, well, we're waiting for Advanced LIGO and Virgo, and that it will be difficult, probably, to detect compact binary mergers, and that one would like to have some additional signatures, and that is part of the motivation why we looked at this endeavor. And here we'll talk particularly about this nuclear synthesis aspect. So there are a number of such signatures that are related to the ejecta of compact binaries. One is, as has been pointed out in the seminal paper by Latimer and Schramm in the 70s already, that this may be interesting for enriching the galaxy with rapid neutron capture elements. Then many people have and will talk about macronovae, so I will not say much about that one. And there's also the recent suggestion that part of the kinetic energy of these ejecta may be dissipated in radio flares. So very briefly about the simulations that I will show here. I will use a three-dimensional Lagrangian smooth particle hydrodynamics code with, so far, still Newtonian gravity, together with a nuclear equation of state, this Shannon equation of state that has been mentioned a couple of times, the relativistic mean field equation of state. And it includes also neutrino emission. And as, well, probably most of you will know, of course, the neutrino optical depths can be very large in the central part of a remnant from a neutron star merger, but it can be essentially zero out, well, a bit in the outer parts of the disk. And this is taken into account by an opacity-dependent multi-flavor leakage scheme that accounts for, well, the bulk of cooling by neutrinos, but it does not include, say, heating effects by neutrinos. So if a neutrino is emitted here, it cannot deposit its energy there and drive off a wind or something. This stuff is not, this physics is not included in these simulations. Now, although that seems a bit astonishing, since compact binary mergers have been explored for, well, decades by now, I think this is the first systematic exploration of the mass parameter range, well, at least for the nuclear synthesis cases. And we have looked at a mass range between 1 and 2 solar masses and looked at 21 combinations of these mass ratios. Now, if you look at that, I plotted here the mass M1 versus mass M2, and you see, of course, well, if you're nicely symmetric in your masses, then you're nicely symmetric in your mass distributions. But even...
one a bit on the low side.
Sorry?
One solar mass is on the low side.
Yes, yes. So, and even if you have just a moderate deviation from a mass ratio of unity, you have already quite some significant deviation in the final mass distribution. And what we find there also is that, well, these cases have larger ejecta masses and also larger ejecta velocities. And if you're looking at things like macronovae, this is, of course, an important issue, that these asymmetric systems are probably brighter. Now, maybe just to show one nice simulation. So this is something like a standard case, a 1.3 and the 1.4 solar mass merger. What you see is the temperature in mega electron volts was shown at a given optical depth, so that you get this volumetric impression. And as you, well, can probably imagine, in the core here you have something of the order of 50 MeV or so, and large neutrino emission getting from that. And all of our stars that we had looked at started in cold beta equilibrium and initial zero spins. Now, if you look at the ejecta, then as Enrico had very nicely summarized this morning, there are various ways in which a compact binary merger will get rid of neutron-rich mass. And there are a number of them, so you expect some ultra-relativistic jets if they form a gamma ray burst. There may be some multi-relativistic outflows, for example, by neutrino-driven winds that maybe interact with the side parts of the jets. There is, as William and Enrico and also Andrei Beloborodov and Brian Metzger had pointed out a couple of years ago, if you follow the accretion disks for a long time, then at some point you will, well, your nucleons will form nuclei and thereby disintegrate the disk. And so there are all kinds of ways to get rid of mass, but I'm not talking about these ones here. So I'm really only talking about the dynamic ejector. And if you look at a simulation like the one that I've shown before, so you see just a snapshot of a 1.3 and a 1.4 solar mass merger at seven, these are different cases, at about 7 milliseconds. And you see there are two types of material that you eject. One thing is, which we've called the tidal component, which is just matter that is just tidally stretched and flung out, and essentially not much heated. And then there is this interaction component, which comes from the region where you have had shear between the neutron stars. But in all of our calculations that we've seen, we're pretty much dominated by the tidal component. This is just a very small fraction of the total ejector masses. Now, what are the amounts? These are, well, some of our 21 simulations. And we have a range that is from a few times 10 to the minus 3 for the lightest stars, so twice one solar mass neutron stars. But the reference case, say something like close to twice 1.4 solar masses, that ejects something like 1.3% of a solar mass. And if you go to more extreme mass ratios, then that could get up to something like 4% of a solar mass that is ejected. Now, if you are interested in macronovae, then you also need the velocities, for example. And of course, you eject the distribution of different velocities. But what I'm showing here is the mass-weighted average of the ejected material. And what I find there is, well, for the most, well, for our reference case, twice 1.4 solar masses, that is something like 10% of the speed of light. Getting up a bit more for some of the, well, more unequal mass cases, but the typical number is something like 10% of the speed of light. And the kinetic energies that are involved in this are, well, also quite some range, typically something like maybe twice 10 to the 50 ergs, but it can be substantially larger, again, in these cases where you have a pretty large asymmetry. Now, what about the electron fraction? If you're interested in nuclear synthesis, as you've heard this morning from Gail, this is one of the important issues. So this is something like the number of electrons per number of baryons. And again, this is now a simulation with a 1.3 and a 1.4 solar mass neutron star. I've chopped off the upper half of the neutron stars, and you see color-coded again at some optical depths. That's why you have to be a bit careful with interpreting this color bar here. But you see, well, you have the crust of the neutron star where you're pretty, well, proton-rich, and the stuff that you eject, these outer bits here, are close to something like 0.03 or so in electron fraction. And again, you eject the distribution, of course, of material, but really, there's a strong peak very close to this 0.03, so something like 3 protons per 100 nucleons that you eject. Now, very briefly about the rapid neutron capture nuclear synthesis, as I've said, that has been suggested already by Latimer and Schramm in the 70s. And it's not just a tiny amount of material, it's really about half of the elements that are heavier than iron. And there seem to be something like two sources. So this is an example, something which is taken from Cowan and Sneeden, about a number of observed systems. And the material which has, well, proton numbers 65 or larger seems to occur in very nearly solar abundances. So the solar abundance pattern is just this line. If you just shift this up and down, then you just see, well, this stuff is extremely robust, which points, well, to something that, whenever it happens, produces more or less the same abundance pattern. The question is, of course, what is this? But there seems to be also an indication that you need, for the lighter R-process material, maybe at least an additional process to produce them. Now, this comes in waves. What is the most promising scenario, but still, if you talk to many people, most think, well, we know it's done in supernovae, and but in the last decade, many people have put in a lot of effort to try to make it in supernovae, and maybe they still do it, but to my understanding, no one knows how. So all the best simulations say, well, we don't see how that should work. And there is some example, some exception maybe. There was some recent calculation about a jet, a magnetically driven jet in a rapidly rotating core collapse supernova, and there they found relatively low YE and relatively large expansion speeds. So maybe this could be an exception to that. But the question is, well, how generic is this? Because you need very specific initial conditions to get there. And one example of an alternative theory, well, is the decompression of neutron star matter that, well, Jim had suggested in the 70s. A number of people have worked on that, including ourselves about 10 years ago, which looked very promising at that time and then was disfavored at some point, and now it's very popular again as a source of our process. So now this is an example of one of the trajectories from our simulations. So it's a bit lots of things going on. So you see color-coded the logarithm of the abundances. This is the neutron number. This is the proton number. This is the neutron drip line, proton drip line. This is the temperature versus the density of this particular trajectory. And here you see the abundances as they evolve. And now you see, well, the neutrons have been eaten up and everything is decaying, well, to this pattern here. And this one is pretty close to solar, but the stuff at mass numbers below something like 130 or so is highly underabundant. So, and we have done this now for all of the 21 simulations. We had detected the unbound material, followed their trajectories, and we've just picked for all of the 21. We have picked something like 30 trajectories for each calculation and added them up. And what you see here is the mass number versus the abundance. And you see here color-coded just some of those 21 calculations. And you see, well, essentially all of them produce more or less, say, to a very good accuracy, the same pattern. So this is compared to the solar system R process, something that Gail has shown also this morning. And it seems just the astrophysical robustness is, say, really stunning. It doesn't matter whether you slam a one solar mass neutron star into one solar mass neutron star or a two solar mass neutron star into a two solar mass neutron star. We have then explored a little bit, and this needs some more work, how this depends, for example, on the way how you treat fission. And if you treat fission differently, then you can fill up this gap, for example. But as Gail has pointed out, this is something that needs further work. And one could possibly, just assume this is the right thing and try to constrain the nuclear physics by trying to reproduce the solar system abundance pattern here. Now, one obvious question is, of course, well, is there enough material ejected to be relevant? And again, although I've heard that there are new rate estimates, I've still taken the one from Calogero et al. So what I've taken here is I took the mass that is ejected in an individual event multiplied by the rate interval from Calogero et al. And compare this to the estimated galactic R process production rate. And this is what I've taken from the literature. And this should be something like 10 to the minus 6 solar masses per year. And this somewhat funny quantity here, that's just labeling the asymmetry in our merger. So this is just, say, something like, think of it as a proxy for the different mergers. And you see all of them very nicely bracket the galactic R process production rate. And, well, since the rates are not extremely well constrained, there is also, I would say, this is also a pretty robust result. So even if more GR or a different equation of state would reduce the ejector amounts, this would still hold. And as I said here, even if the YEs change a little bit also, you get more or less still the same abundance pattern here. So I would say this is an excellent candidate for the source of the heaviest R process elements, but questions regarding, well, for example, the chemical evolution of galaxies and so still need to be explored. So this needs an update as well. So maybe to summarize, so what is new about those things? Well, one thing is, I think it's really the first broad parameter space of the neutron star masses. The other thing is, all calculations I'm aware of did not really know the electron fractions. They either assumed them to be in a, well, interesting range, or they assumed they would not change during the evolution. And here we started from, well, cold beta equilibrium and had electron and positron captures taken into account. And so we pretty safely believe that these numbers are correct. Then typical properties, something like 10% of the speed of light, something like twice 10 to the 50 ergs in terms of kinetic energies, typically something like 1% of a solar mass with a very low Ye. And well, as we have said, this may be related to a number of observable events. And in terms of the nucleosynthesis, essentially all of the ejecta undergoes R process, and it's extremely robust, essentially really just independent of the system that you're looking at. And I think this conclusion is pretty robust, even if you change, say, well, the ejecta amounts by a factor of a few or so. And it's also very robust by varying the Ye, for example, by a factor of a few or so. So, and thank you very much for your attention.
Any question? By the way, we missed one of the microphone. I don't know whether, okay.
In the proton-neutron plot, why do all the elements beta decay at the same time?
They start beta decaying at the same time because that's a pretty well-defined moment when all the neutrons run out. Otherwise, they want to decay, capture a new neutron. So it's just at some point the neutrons are gone. That's pretty much after a second. And then it's just decaying back.
A question about leakage scheme. Do neutrinos conduct heat in the scheme?
They don't, know.
No. Other questions?